You're listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio. Juan Cosby.
We waiting on reparations.
We waiting on reparations. Hey. Let them know.
Someone caught me a hottie like the metal when the kettle sings. I want to be subcommandante, but I'll settle for a Senate seat so I could put somebody penniless as head of Treasury. And every debt'll be forgiven, medical and everything. And while we're at it, plant a plot of fennel leaf and win the greens on every street and pay incarcerated folks re-entering to tend the beans so every neighborhood has got a crate of food and every neighbor has a stable roof and all the basic needs are sated, emotional and behavioral. Ooh. That's the fate of world I stayed to pull from the stranglehold of the status quo. But I can make the change alone. That's why the day you join us is my favorite day to come.
Ooh, shit. Waiting on reparations. Yeah, we waiting on reparations. Now you got that one. That'll be the intro.
Hey, this is Lingua Franca.
I'm Dope Knife, and we are
waiting on reparations. Hurry up.
Please do. Please hurry up. Oh, we were busy this weekend, weren't we?
Got out and pounded some pavement for this district attorney's runoff here in December.
Yeah.
Here next week. Next Tuesday.
It's next week? Oh,
shit. It's crazy. Yeah, it's been crazy times in Georgia down here, man. But
it was fun,
hopefully
though.
We can elect a progressive district attorney that's interested in bringing restorative justice into the DA's office.
And no doubt.
Eliminate some of our disparities racially and socioeconomically in our sentencing.
So we were out canvassing for Deborah Gonzalez, who is running for DA here in Athens, Georgia. So, Mariah, for people who might be a little fatigued with election season, or maybe they're only anticipating the big shit, like the Senate joint coming up, or just people who don't even really know, explain to them why it's important to get up and make sure that you go vote for your local DA election, not just in Athens, but anywhere.
It's crazy, man. Something like Athens, because 50 black men make up 15% of Athens' population, but 60% of those sentenced to prison in state court, I think 45% of folks sentenced in municipal court, 5 times as likely to be arrested for marijuana. Despite the fact white and black people use it at the same rates, 1/2 of the juvenile justice system cases are black youth, all the shit. Oh, and, the Georgia Institute for Transitional Justice found that even when you adjust for criminal histories and other aspects of a defendant's background, black men were spending a year longer in jail in Athens than white men for the exact same crimes. And this is all shit that a district attorney can fix. She chooses, hopefully if she wins, will choose what cases to bring against people. So she could just be
make a little balance. Yeah.
Candidate's name is Deborah Gonzalez. She's a former state house representative. Now running for district attorney, actually an entertainment lawyer, but, very committed to racial and social justice. But I think one of the most badass things about her is that Brian Kemp actually tried to steal this election by just canceling it and appointing someone as her DA. She sued him in Superior Court and won to get the election to happen.
That's what's up.
Yeah, she sued him and won to get the election to happen. So
I guess Kemp's having a bad week, isn't he? First Trump blames him for Georgia going blue, and now he's part of the Venezuelan George Soros Antifa conspiracy. And then, this election's about to go down, and hopefully she's going to win.
She's earned it. And so we're going to be out here knocking on doors for the whole next week.
No doubt.
And I got the true pleasure. As much as I love knocking on doors and bringing political messages to the masses, I got to see Mac in a dress shirt. And so I felt very, very hashtag blessed that day.
You can't go up to people's door and shit with a mask and a Biggie shirt that says ready to die, talk about, let me talk to you about your local election. So had to spruce it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, when this episode is coming out, it's going to be Thanksgiving. So I know that a lot of you probably won't be able to listen to this on the day that it drops. But for those of you who are, happy Thanksgiving and all that jazz. it made us a little reflective on everything because this podcast has been going on since June of this year, but it's been in production since October of 2019. As a matter of fact, we recorded almost 8 or 9 episodes, like from October 2019 up to January 2021, before we took a break, and we had like 9 or 10 episodes stocked up. And, you know, just while waiting for a launch date, a post-COVID, post-George Floyd world just kind of made those episodes not seem as striking as perhaps we wanted the show to come out being off the jump. And not only that, but we were also green. We didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We were trying to figure it out. So the format of what we recorded back then is not what we do on a weekly basis now. But just kind of celebrating the anniversary-ish, you know, of the time that Mariah and I have spent working on this show, and Joel and Taylor and the whole, you know, everybody, the whole team of everybody that helped us bring this podcast to you every week. Wanted to celebrate a really fly conversation that we had this time last year with Mike Seatown from the popular YouTube channel Dead End Hip Hop. It's a hip hop music review channel. We were talking about like problematic aspects of mainstream hip hop that we all still love anyway, and then that kind of turned into some other shit. It was all over the place, but it was fly, and we ended up bringing Mike Seatown back now so that we could talk to him just to, you know, get some of his thoughts fresh in the post-COVID, post-election, post-George Floyd world. So we're going to get into that after the jump, and I'm definitely going to be back with some new raps because the shit that I spit last year, I don't like anymore.
This week, we're having a discussion about the problematic aspects of the mainstream hip-hop we can't help but love, and where, if at all, a line exists that we can't cross as self-identified progressive people. We're going to be talking about problematic music that you can't help but dance to nonetheless, music too fly to turn off, even if the lyrics themselves are a turn off. And I want to talk a little bit about the concept of sonic narratives, as it's been argued by hip-hop feminists. By hip-hop beat that tells a story might be different a little bit than the lyrics, the lyrical content of the song itself, which allows consumers to turn off their critical listening ears and enjoy the story that the sounds can tell us. And we'll be contemplating the possibility that, you know, the old slogan goes, free your mind and your ass will follow, but perhaps it is the other way around.
Perhaps. And talking with us today, we're going to be having this discussion with one of my favorite people.
Dave.
Officially, you can call him a music critic or a music personality.
He's making somewhat of a stank
face. He's making stank faces that I'm saying that. Dang, I don't know what to call you.
I don't either.
We're going to be talking with my homie Mike Seatown from Dead End Hip Hop. Dead End Hip Hop's music review channel on YouTube that I personally have been watching for like, was it like 9 years now?
Y'all have been in your ninth year?
Yeah, I mean, I started watching in 2011.
Eight or nine, something like that, yeah.
Shit. Hey, so, Mike, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself for those who don't know you?
For those of you that don't know me, so Dead End Hip Hop, we do album reviews, we do culture conversations. Outside of Dead End Hip Hop, we also have a podcast called Is the Mic Still On, where we talk about stuff outside of hip hop. We even talk about movies. We have another podcast called Frames Per Second. But outside of all that shit, I also got my own shit that Mac did not mention.
Oh,
but,
that's why I passed the mic to you. I thought the podcast was gonna pass the mic
because it's only me here. You know, the mother dudes ain't here, so we're gonna talk about me. But yeah, I have my own YouTube channel as well where I talk about records, talk about I don't know, social issues, talk about whatever. MikeCtown.com. That's MikeCtown.com. Check me out.
You guys gotta check it out. And also when you check out the Dead End Hip Hop channel, there's a review that they did of this guy, Dope Nice album, Things Got Worse.
Sounds fucking terrible. Sounds like a travesty.
Don't listen to it. Just check it out.
Don't listen to it. But speaking of music we do listen to, despite it from an ideological standpoint being somewhat of a dumpster fire, let's get into the topic of today.
I guess the first thing that I would want to know is, are we operating from a standpoint where we think or consider everything that a rapper says that we take it literally? Like, they definitely mean that shit. I'm only asking just because, going by me, I would imagine that to a certain base degree, a lot of rappers probably say shit in songs that they wouldn't say in real life.
No? Do we disagree?
I kind of, just a little bit of a disagreement.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, because I was listening and you were saying that, you know, it kind of seems like rappers will say things in lyrics that they wouldn't say in everyday life.
Yeah, I might take issue with that point also. Because they might be also calling somebody a bitch.
Absolutely.
Like, at the strip club. As much as they would in their actual songs about being at the strip club.
I guarantee that rappers that are calling people the F-A-G word are doing it in real life. And probably on a regular basis.
I mean, would you say that is the norm? And I mean,
I think Vinny Paz probably calls people the F word on a semi-regular basis. Even if it's like a quote-unquote joke, or if it's like, I'm angry, he's using that.
You know, as devoted hip-hop listeners, we're no strangers to misogyny and hip-hop lyrics. I think there's female as well as male rappers who be calling ladies bitches and hoes and otherwise describing women in disrespectful terms, explicitly describing sexual acts, the list goes on. The same can be said of depictions of violence and drug activity in hip-hop songs, which I think y'all will be talking about a little bit later in the episode. But at the end of the day, what people really resonate with is the feeling that the beat and the cadence and the rhyme of a song conveys. It's like it tells a separate story from that which is actually being manifest in the lyrics itself. I think that you can sit down, or you can stand up rather, in the club and hear a song and not necessarily parse the specific topics that are being talked about and how they're being talked about, but you can be moved by the story that the beat tells you and by the aesthetics of, like, the rhythm of the delivery, the style of the delivery, the way the words coalesce around rhyme and things like that, that, like, all together kind of put you in a mood and that transport you, in a sense, through the purely art, like, creative aesthetic side of the music before you get to say, like, well, he said what now?
Well, I mean, I definitely can vibe with that, but I just don't necessarily know if that is most of the case or some of the case, or, you know what I mean? Like, because I definitely feel that there's some songs that is the reason that people like it. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you took a song like Bad and Bougie with the same exact beat, same exact cadence, same exact flow, and you simply change the concept of it, I don't think as many people would like it.
Is the concept offensive? I've never really paid attention
to
that song.
It's not necessarily a matter of the concept being offensive.
I mean, I don't offensive. Like Migos. So that's nothing against them,
obviously. That's where this conversation kind of, like, to me gets interesting, because it's like, what do we mean by problematic?
First off, let me just say, I'm coming from the standpoint of, I don't use words like problematic the way the motherfuckers use words like problematic. Like, I would never describe some issue I took with music as problematic.
Well, give me an example, though. A short one, of course.
Because
what is it
talking
about?
Because that's the thing. Because if you ask me, I've heard Bad and Bougie probably dozens, if not 100 times, right? Mm. But I can't tell you what it's about.
Because I don't know what the fuck they're
saying. Because that's not what matters to me. Because you don't know what the fuck they're saying because of the new style of rap that's emerging.
Sure.
That is instead, like, appealing because it has a certain cadence to it. This sort of indecipherability that, you know, might be purposeful, but really just, you know, creates this aesthetic aura around it that you get down to regardless of what they're saying. And then the beat itself.
Sure.
That is why people are listening to it.
But if Bad and Bougie were about hygiene and good relationships, do we think like people would be like, yeah,
no rap song about hygiene and good relationships is going to do well.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's almost as if, like,
but to the counterpoint, though, we don't know what Bad and Bougie is about.
That's true, but I don't think that what it's about is necessarily relevant to what is said. And let me make sure that I read this right. My bitch is bad and bougie, cooking up dope with the Uzi. My nigga's savage, ruthless. We got 30s, 100 rounds, too. Now, to me, personally, again, disclaimer, over a hot beat with a dope cadence, niggas is in the studio fucking around, I think the shit's fly. I have no problem with it whatsoever. But there you have it, right there in the lyrics. We got misogyny, my bitch, cooking up dope, glorification of drugs, with the Uzi, glorification of guns, my niggas is savage and ruthless, feeding into stereotypes. We got 30s, 100 round two, more stereotypes. I don't think that most people found Bad and Bougie to be a problematic song, but we just heard the lyrics. I mean, it is what it is, right?
Sounds about right. Sounds like a good Friday.
My bitch is bad and bougie. My niggas are savage and ruthless, cooking up dope with the Uzi.
I mean, like I said, I don't
That to me is such a generalist song. It's it touches on all the points. Bitches, it just, drugs, I got some guns.
They're covering all bases. So then that's
like,
what I said.
They're covering all the bases.
So that's what
it's
I mean.
Not, and see,
good
that's,
business. So
that
then,
to me doesn't even register as like a highly problematic song because it's not a pointed
so then
attack.
So then that's what I'm saying.
On
then.
Any
so then,
person.
Like, I feel like if I had enough time, I could find a bunch of black people over the age of 40 who the lyrics I just read being like the number one hit in a country is highly problematic. You know what I'm saying? But again, I would disagree with them, but it's just like, so they're wrong, but then somebody else who's mad about another aspect of something, they're right though. I don't know. It's just the inconsistency in this shit, man.
I mean, that sounds like a bad idea, like, but it doesn't sound quote unquote problematic.
It's not particularly egregious.
Sure.
To me, and I agree with y'all, it's not problematic to me,
okay.
Right? I know that I have a 64-year-old mother that it is problematic for. You know what I'm saying? Like, now all I'm saying is when she says that to me, I roll my eyes. But the people, I feel like people who would...
The type of people who take it upon themselves to be the arbiters of like, this is problematic and this shit's not problematic, they have a very... inconsistent, uneven way of doing that shit that just elicits like skepticism. If on Saturday you're in the club or on Twitter talking about how you're shaking your ass to Bad and Bougie and how you love that song and that's your jam, but then on Monday MC Get Busy said some line that you didn't like, so it's like, oh nah, he's sexist though. Then the only reason that you don't feel that way about Bad and Bougie is because you don't take it literally.
I think as hip-hop listeners, perhaps we are a bit desensitized in terms of what strikes us as problematic because, like, we hear very, like, ordinary allusions to selling drugs and doing this and that in the music all the time. This to me is not an over-the-top example of lyrics that are problematic. So that's what I want to get into. What is over the top? What is too much? Because that to me, it's just like another day in the fucking neighborhood.
Are we talking about solely mainstream rappers? Or are we talking about
All kinds. I brought in were mostly mainstream.
Yeah, I don't think.
But like, I don't have any
mainstream.
It doesn't necessarily even have to be something that people dance to, but just something that generally is like.
I mean, okay, so like when you're talking about that Migos song, I guess. It doesn't really faze me that way.
It doesn't sound
wild.
I'm being a devil's advocate by bringing up the Migos song because it doesn't faze me.
But I feel like the people that would be extremely bothered by that song would get bothered by just about any rap song, period. They'd probably get bothered by a common song.
Just from a standpoint of, and again, this is all anecdotal, but like from my experience of engaging with people in the Twitter sphere on like conversations like that, that's not the case.
That they're okay with most rap songs, but they're bothered by. It sounds like, you know, this is my like Chip or Kip that goes to like Georgia Tech and doesn't really have any black friends, and he's bothered by that. Doesn't it sound like a rap fan would pull this song and be like, "Oh my god, cooking dope with the Uzi? No, I'm done."
No, I don't think there's. I don't think for the most part anybody's bothered by Bad and Bougie. It's like it was a hit number one song that people listen to all across the world by the. Hundreds of millions, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think that there was any sort of like reaction to Bad and Bougie as it being problematic. As a matter of fact, Kip with no black friends probably loves Bad and Bougie more than most black people. Knows every word, especially the niggas of Savage and Ruthless part. Probably knows how to rap that whole hook by heart.
I am not bothered by that.
I know you're not, but I'm trying to parse down the people that are. And should we as a hip-hop community even be concerned with these people? Or should we be more concerned with shit like I'm grabbing snitches and putting them in lakes and ditches. And if I catch AIDS, I'm going to start raping bitches.
I feel like the sort of person who would have like some sort of moral outrage against Bad and Bougie, they also would not fuck with that line that you just said. But I feel like somebody younger who doesn't fuck with that line that you just said probably doesn't have any problem with Bad and Bougie. And if you got like an honest, heartfelt answer from them, I'm pretty sure it would boil down to, well, I like Migos. I don't like that other guy. Which is fine. I mean, some people, if somebody rubs you the wrong way, that you take their shit more serious than you do other people's shit, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But, you know, that is what's going on. At least it feels that way.
And I'm really glad you brought that up, actually, because a lot of what I came to talk to about today was misogyny in hip-hop lyrics, because I guess misogyny has been more pervasive in my life experience, and so that, to me, is where I draw a line. However, I had not really interrogated the fact that if in a song they're talking about, like, squeezing the trigger, you know, busting Uzi, whatever, I don't really hear that. I don't really hear that. I don't really worry about that, because that is not as like.
I just think it's interesting. I don't think you're wrong for not hearing it. You know what I'm saying?
But the fact that you talk about how the influence of one's life experiences then colors what you hear as, you know, problematic or realistic or persuasive in these songs.
I told you this is
interesting.
I told you this story, I think last night or the night before. I'll tell it to you, right? And it's funny because it's like related to the Bad and Bougie song again. So I was watching a basketball game, and this was like 2 years ago. And I was like, whatever feed I was watching, you could see the halftime show, right? And it was like a Boston Celtics game. So this is like Boston, white. 98% white people. You know what I'm saying? And the halftime show, there was like this troop of kids who came out to dance, right? And it was like, oh, word. Like, that's dope. It was
that's
like,
so wholesome.
It was like a troop. It was like 30 of them. Like
black
all,
kid?
No, white kid.
No.
Oh, like, okay.
Literally white. Like okay. Eight, nine. Nobody was like older than 10
that's
from my
cute.
Eyes, right?
Okay.
They're dancing to an unedited Bad and Bougie. And I'm just sitting there watching it. And there was just something about in that moment watching it. And it was like, there's something about this that's not cool, man.
None of those kids knew it was unedited. None of those kids knew it was unedited. They didn't understand a single word that came out.
But no.
I'm kind of kidding.
That is kind of the point, because what you hear is you get this sort of like impressionistic view or experience of the song when it's coming in years, when you're dancing on the Boston Celtics court to it, that like all you're hearing is like the sum total of the song, which is musical.
Sure.
It's not being whittled down into like line by line. Oh, he's cooking up crack with the Uzi. Like nobody's getting to that level with it.
So was it more your problem with the white kids that were dancing to it?
You know, I think that what it comes down to is like if rich, stuffy white people had a moral problem against Bad and Bougie and didn't want their children dancing to it, I would like it more. But the fact that they don't have a problem with it just sets all my spider senses off that something's terribly wrong.
It seems like there was a time when just hip-hop got more pushback for it.
Really? What was this?
Like the 90s when C. Dolores Tucker was fucking taking steamrollers to Ice-T and Ice Cube CDs.
And what did that do?
Street,
that didn't do anything.
How can you say it didn't do anything? That shit was like specifically against misogyny and rap. Like they were, like C. Dolores Tucker was doing that shit specifically about songs like Bitches Ain't Shit or Bitches a Bitch or NWA One Less Bitch You Gotta Worry About. Like that shit was, it was important. I mean, back then we were rolling our eyes and was like, oh, they're old. They don't know what the fuck they talking about. They hating. But like 25 years later, you look back at it and it's like, damn, if hip hop wasn't getting at least that sort of pushback back in the 90s, like if the gangsta era of rap was just allowed to go unfettered with no sort of criticism from within the black community, in the hip hop community itself, like niggas might literally be cavemen right now. Literally. Queen Latifah's UNITY, that is a reaction and a criticism of hip hop. from within. Like, these things are important. And what it did is it kind of made more, like, thinking rappers, like
Ice-T and Ice Cube, to have to be able to defend their
music. To, like, reckon with, yeah.
Reflect, evolve, or even dig in their views, but you're confronted with it. And then the next generation of hip-hoppers learn, which is why you have a new generation of the generation of hip-hop that came after that was more conscious to issues like that. And the generation that came after them was more conscious to issues like that. From a mainstream level, I don't see that shit anymore.
That you don't go through.
I disagree. I feel like we're in an era where everything gets put on the mic under the microscope to a much higher degree because everybody's got a motherfucking blog. You know, Blavity or Bustle or whoever is going to make a quick buck off a clickbait article writing about how Taylor Swift is actually not a feminist or whatever. Like, so, I don't know, man. I just don't really...
And plus,
I mean,
this is starting to creep into the area of respectability politics.
Boom,
and I don't
ma'am.
Really fuck with that.
I don't really fuck
I'm
with that
I'm not saying
either.
You're trying
no, no, no.
to. Don't
I mean,
take
but,
me wrong.
But here's
but
the thing. Here's
I think
the thing,
when
right?
you start going down this road, that's kind of where... Because see, Dolores Tucker was
going to be able to talk to her
she's
about
here's the thing.
It.
She
the
should
thing,
be complaining about rap. I'm of a certain age. I'm not going to say. I should be complaining about rap because it's kind of a young person's sport. And
I disagree with that.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. We can't agree on anything.
No. Nas got props because he was a kid that sounded like a grown-ass man. Not because he was a dumb fucking kid that was sounding like a dumb fucking kid on the mic. This aspect of the shit is to be continued.
Yeah, every person in the history of ever who got old started decrying the habits... and the customs of the newer generation
Facts.
As somewhat deteriorated.
Yes.
I mean, going back to ancient fucking Greece.
Yes, real ill how all those newer generations kept that Greek empire going after all these years, too. They're thriving.
If you guys are on the train, that the reason that a 50-year-old in 1996 wouldn't like Nas's Illmatic album is the same reason that, like, a 30-year-old in 2019 doesn't like Tekashi 6ix9ine. I think that's nuts.
I don't. Because I guarantee if you play any rap album
nuts.
For C. Dolores Tucker, she'd say this is trash. It didn't matter what rap album it was. She just picked Ice-T and Ice Cube because they were easily, like...
targetable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you played her fucking... I'm trying to think of a clean rapper from the 90s.
Well,
if you played her like a... Nah, Tribe? She might be okay with Will Smith. If you played her Tribe album, she's going to find something.
Oh, wait. Will Smith had a racy song, yeah. Will Smith had this one song called You Saw My Blinker, Bitch.
Oh, yeah, she was Asian.
You remember that?
I remember that.
You saw my blinker, bitch.
I do remember that.
It was like, yo.
He tries to act like that shit ain't happened.
It was literally like, yo, Fresh Prince got that one song where he said,
bitch. He said, bitch.
You say what?
But did you really say it, though?
That's weird as fuck to me.
But anyway, we're back.
Oh, yeah, we're back.
We're back. We're talking about problematic content in hip-hop songs. Where we draw the line, if any.
So let's talk about that line.
Which line?
The line. Like, where is the... I mean, I don't know if we established...
Where is the line?
Where is everyone's line? Mike, what is your line on, like, what is it... What are the things that is you cannot allow the slickness of the rhyme or the beat or however you feel about the song... to, like, let what you just heard slide?
I mean, I'm not even going to sit here and lie. I don't think I have a line because, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I'm privileged enough to not have to worry about certain things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though I'm listening to something and I can critically analyze that thing at the same time, I'm not going to lie and be like, yo, if... I'm trying to think of, like, if Killer Mike one day slips up and says some really fucked up shit in a bar, I'm just going to be like, all right, I'm done with Killer Mike forever.
I'm not for, like, canceling people.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Yeah.
I'm not either. But even on a personal level, you know, I'm not saying, like, I'm going to go public and be like, yo, everybody, stop listening to this certain rapper. Even on a personal level, am I going to be like, all right, well, I can no longer listen to any of your music because you said this one thing. I don't think I have that. And again, I think that comes from a place of privilege because, I mean... what can, outside of a white person calling me, you know, nigger, what is there that a rapper could possibly say that will personally offend me to the point where I have to draw a line? I don't have that issue. So I have the privilege of ignoring certain things. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
No, I feel you.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like with the misogyny inherent in a lot of hip-hop music, I don't have that privilege right. when I hear certain things. Take the classic example of Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke. Like, when I hear that rapey kind of insinuation being made, I mean, it doesn't help that it's a ripoff of fucking Marvin Gaye. And
what
so,
does he say? I'm sorry.
I know so you want it. You know, you're an animal.
I know you want it. Does yeah. he, is that legit?
That's
like
the
hook.
Fucking hook. No, I know you really? Want it.
You know you want it.
Really?
You know you want it. It's Blurred Lines.
Yeah. Blurred Lines. The idea that like, oh, wow. she's in the club. Rape anthem, like, wow. she knows what's going on. Taking advantage. Man. And like domesticating women like they're animals. I'ma domesticate you, like whatever. Like, so, see, and you got this face like, oh, ooh.
I
and
do, but if Benny said that shit, I'd probably be like, yeah, blur them lines, Benny.
Because
but,
it's
you know,
aesthetic.
I know,
because
that's fucked
aesthetic.
Up. That's
because
fucked up.
Because it's aesthetic, and you know what? I think the people's reaction should be like, for me, it's kind of like, what do I believe? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I hear somebody say something that does hit me in that spot, then it comes down to, do I genuinely believe that this person is, like, advocating something?
So it kind of comes back to that, like, literal question. What do you take seriously or not? I mean, I know with me, I say shit that I don't mean all the time. Either just jokes, or I'm just rapping, or making a point, or whatever. I'm totally open to somebody being like, oh, that's in bad taste, and them not fucking with it. Because I feel that way about other shit. But for somebody to make an assertion as if they know, like, who I am based on that, like, I'm not about to meet Al Pacino and start yelling at him about, like, why did you kill Fredo? Because I'm sure he would look at me and be like, it's a movie, you dumb fuck, you know? So it's like, not everything is real.
Yeah, I think with alternative or underground hip-hop as well as mainstream, a line I do draw is when people are reporting on facts versus, like, touting a way of life that others should endorse and embrace. So if someone's like, yo, I shot a nigga, like, I'm gonna have to just listen to that and not take offense to it because that's just fucking real life, real last thing that he's reporting. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, be, but I don't know though. Even in the case where I'm like, yo, I'm gonna come by your block and fucking light your shit up. Like, I'm probably not gonna wince at that because I don't know. It's normalized. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Do you listen to that stuff though? Does it not turn you off?
No.
Okay. Cause it does to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm one of those sort of cats where it's like I try to make an effort to listen to, like, a lot of shit and in as much stuff as I can just because I like rap. I just like to consume rap and, you know what I mean, at least be able to say I've heard something once. But, like, because of how I know the stuff that makes me feel some sort of way makes me feel, it's like, none of the beats are hot enough for me to be like, I'm just going to listen to this all day. You know what I'm saying? Because it makes me feel some sort of way. You know?
Yeah.
And I know that about myself, so I'm not going to, like, listen to it just so I can get mad. You know what I'm saying?
Like if I put on a music video and I see a bunch of, like, 16-year-olds pointing automatic weapons at the camera, like, there's no part of me that thinks that that's cool. Therefore, like, I don't feel any pressure to, like, say that I like it or any shit like that. I don't think that it, like, shouldn't exist or that people who do like it shouldn't be able to like it. I just know that I don't fuck with it.
I feel you. Like, when I was younger, you know, I would listen to Sextile all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I would listen to fucking Cool Keith records. I would listen to Necro records. But as I get older and I start realizing, like, yo, nah, a lot of that shit you're saying is really fucked up. You rapping about chaining women up in your fucking basement? Nah, bro, I can't rock with that anymore.
That sounds...
Probably would draw a line.
No, wait.
Yeah, that, I mean, I did when I was younger. And the thing is, when I was younger, I felt like I was really in this struggle. I was out in these streets in this quote-unquote PC thing. But I was still listening to the shit and it didn't bother me. But as I'm older, it's just like, man, nah, that shit is really fucked up.
To me, it's the to me, listening to old stuff like that, the pointlessness of it is what gets to me. You know what I mean? Is it's just like, it's like it's not funny because I'm not 16 anymore.
Exactly.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But again, you
but
know,
they weren't 16 when they made. Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah, but again, it all goes, you know, I know that people, you know, the common consensus is that intent doesn't matter and it's all, the only thing that matters is what happens. Mm. But, yeah. You know, there's a certain level of like Necro, for example, right? Like as a specific example, Necro, where it's like, you know, I know that Necro like has like a family with like, you know what I'm saying? And nephews and nieces. And he's like, and I know that he's like really into horror movies mm-hmm. and old Italian horror movies and stuff like that. So from that perspective, it's like everything or in that light, like everything that Necro does in his music makes sense from that standpoint. It's like, oh, this is like a horror movie fan who's making, you know what I mean? Now, if the basis is, no, horror movies are wrong and this shouldn't exist because it's problematic. Well, I'm not saying I agree with that, but that's the stance that I feel that you should come at that from.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Okay, Necro is a, I guess you could call him a, he's a horrorcore rapper. To put it simply, more simply than it should be put, he's the sort of rapper who, like, he watches horror movies a lot and he'll be like, yo, I'm gonna write a song as the slasher who's going after the babysitter. And the whole song will be from the perspective. You know what I mean? That sort of shit.
I kind of sort of get what you're saying.
Like,
because I mean, a lot of those old Italian horror movies, those giallo movies, are very much misogynistic because it's usually about hunting and killing women.
It's the intent, is what I'm saying.
I get it. But at the same time, he's not stupid. He's not.
No, he's
an adult, and he should know. Like, yo, I put this shit in here,
and
that's what it is.
I feel you're absolutely right about that.
I'm hit you with a different one.
Okay.
All right. So remember back in the day when Rick Ross had that line about putting the pill in her drink, and Shane didn't know it. And everyone was outraged. And I mean, I didn't listen to Rick Ross anyway, so it didn't make a difference to me. I was just like, either way, I'm not listening to his music. But I understood why people were pissed off. And I was like, yeah, that's a really fucked up line. Why would you say something like that? That's crazy. And then I remember it's the Necro line. They're on a Run the Jewels album. Neither rapper said it, but Prince Paul had like this interlude type of deal. And he's like, yo, it's probably that half a Molly I put in her drink. Yeah. And I remember I listened to the album probably 35 times, and that line never ever even popped out to me at all.
Yeah.
And then it was just one day at the gym, I was like, damn, that's kind of fucked up that he like. But at the same time, I don't skip that song.
Because it's the intent.
What is the intent, though?
I have no idea what the intent is. You have no idea what they're thinking when they write this.
He's trying to be funny? Is that the intent?
Is he trying to be funny? Is he being serious? Did he really do this?
Listening to that skit, I mean, maybe I'm just like, look, but I don't hear that skit and think, oh, man, Prince Paul's being that's like a really cool dude. Like, yeah, that's like awesome. Like, I think they're like satirizing like a you know what I mean? A type of person.
That's
like, but again, it's just like all specific. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that specific line and what I interpreted it.
But let me ask you, Mike, why don't you skip over it? Not as a challenge to you, but like I'm interested in like what makes it so that people give a pass on certain music.
I think it's personal.
Because I definitely have music I give a pass on too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, again, it goes back to the idea of I have the privilege to ignore it. Because I, as a man, I know it happens. But it's a lot less likely that I'm going to go to a club and someone's going to spike my drink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not something that I have to go out into the world and really worry about. So I have the privilege of saying, you know what? Yeah, that's fucked up in the sense of I wouldn't want anything like that to happen to any of my friends. But I personally don't have to worry about that. And also, it goes back to the aesthetic thing that we were talking about earlier. It's a fucking dope song. And
I've listened to the shit out of RTJ, and I can't even pick out what you're talking about. I don't even
remember. It doesn't jump out.
I don't even remember. See? Yeah.
It doesn't jump out.
I mean,
because it's the aesthetic experience.
And that's not even me trying to criticize RTJ. It's just a matter of... Because, I mean, Mac is right. They were obviously, you know, trying to be tongue-in-cheek.
I just...
But that goes to the thing you're talking about earlier, though, that if I just handed you that line and nothing else, you had never heard the song. If I just put that line in front of you where he's like, why is this girl so happy? Oh, it's probably the half of Molly I put in her drink. And I just gave you that and walked away. You're going to think, oh, my God, Run the Jewels supports rape. So should they have to explain that, or should you actually have to, like, bear the responsibility to go hear the entire song and determine, okay, are they actually endorsing scumbaggery, or?
It all comes down to, like, a personal choice all the way around, in my opinion. It's personal on the fan, on how they want to interpret it, and it's personal on the artist and on how they want to interpret it. For me personally, like, my most popular song, I have a line where I said, Obama killed way more kids than Adam Lanza. I wrote that in 2014. I meant every single syllable of it when I wrote it, because it's how I felt. You fast forward 2-3 years after that, and if I'm doing a show, I gotta, like, think about how I'm gonna rework that line, because somebody could come up to me afterward and be like, hey, so I heard that shit you said about Obama. So, like, what, you fuck with Trump or something? Now, as an artist, in that situation, you can have one of two reactions. You can either have the reaction of, I don't give a fuck what you think. You can think whatever the fuck you want about my shit. I ain't explaining shit. Or you could be the sort of artist that's like me, that's like, oh, man, I don't want somebody to go away with the wrong impression than what I intended to elicit with the art I made, so let me explain that. And it just comes down to that interaction right there.
You know how many parties I've gone to and someone finds out, like Dead and Hip Hop did this thing with Patreon in California, and this white dude came up to me and FIFO and found out that we did hip hop stuff. And I can't remember exactly what he asked me, but he asked me something that required me to defend some kind of lyric. And you can ask FIFO. I got my shit, I stood up and I walked away. And Ralph asked me later, he's like, why? And I was like, bruh, I'm not doing this with people. Like, he wasn't curious about my opinion. He had his opinion. He was waiting for me to give half of mine so he could give all of his. It was not an inquisitive question. And I can sense that kind of shit out. This dude didn't listen to rap. He clearly didn't. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you came up and wanted to ask me, like, yo, what do you think about this? Yeah, sit down, let's talk about it. But some random dude off the street in a fucking Abercrombie and Fitch shirt? Nah, bro. And that's not like a racist thing. He could be black, white, whatever. But I'm just not going to entertain that kind of shit.
Hey, Dope Knife here. So that was just part of the interview that we did with Mike C. Town a year ago. There's still an hour and a half of that interview left because we didn't know what we were doing back then. So who knows, maybe sometime in the future we'll post the rest of that up. But fast forward to now, present day, we brought Mike back on the show just to touch base, just to get some of his thoughts and pick his brain a little bit about some of the things that have happened in between when we recorded that interview and now.
So how do you feel about the way that rappers are engaging with our current political moment?
Or just the current life moment.
Life moment, you know, whatever moment this is we're in.
This moment in human history. Do you think in general rappers are
like, well, what do you think about what they're doing? Yeah, what do you think about these cats?
I mean, I guess it depends on who we're talking about. I mean,
talk us through a couple in your eyes. Maybe the highlights and then some of the lowlights.
I don't honestly know that I have any highlights, man. I mean,
damn, son, it's not like, that bad out here. God, Jesus.
It kind of is, man. I don't really see, like, I know it sounds bad, but I don't really see a lot of rappers that are, like, really stepping up to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, at least not, like, these, like, mainstream guys that have, like, a lot of young eyes on them.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I'm kind of just, like, let down by, you know, big time mainstream rappers right now. They're just kind of more focused on their money than they are people. Man, what else would you expect really from a mainstream rapper anyway? I mean,
it's like they told you, they've been telling you for years, they don't basically give a shit about nothing but the paper. But
I am of a mind that, like, if you don't have something to say, don't just say something.
That is true.
So I admire that some folks are like, I don't don't really have anything intelligent to articulate about this situation. And they don't. Because when people do, they start running up saying shit, and everyone looks to them like a leader of a movement when they're like not actually on the ground doing the organizing in these communities. Then it's just like, shut the fuck up and like let us do what we're doing. So yeah. I actually am very thankful for those that have not spoken out on the current
That's fair.
I wish everyone had a good take or like, you know, but they don't. So it's better that they're quiet.
Aren't we supposed to be in a recession? Didn't like 40 million people lose their job and shit? And it's just like, I don't know. That hasn't affected the big money talk at all. You know, it's almost like made it kind of worse.
Yeah, because now you're really bragging to people that don't have shit. And then you're wondering, I know this sounds bad, but then you're wondering why, you know, shit that happens to people like Boosie and then shit that happens to people like Benny the Butcher. Like,
I was just
now you wonder why these things happen. Like, you're fucking bragging about your chains and all this shit, and then you're riding through neighborhoods where motherfuckers don't have anything, and you're riding around in Rolls Royces. Yeah, of course you're gonna get run up on.
Those are just two names in like a list. There's like been like five or six cats who have been shot in Texas and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's been, you know, weird because it's all been happened, you know, bunched up in a short amount of time. But then you just have to wonder, coincidentally, last weekend, there was like one of the longest food lines that we've ever seen in American history in Texas. You know, like 6,000 cars were lined up for a food bank.
Right.
So does that go hand in hand with the desperation that people feel and situations like that?
Yeah, I mean, I look at that because we talked about that today a little bit. But I mean, I look at that and I don't want to blame Benny for what happened. I mean, I hope he's okay and all that good shit. But with Benny, I don't want to make it seem like I'm like, oh, well, you know, you should have known better. You shouldn't have been doing X, Y, Z. No, that still sucks that you got shot in the leg because somebody tried to rob you. But at the same time, I would think that maybe once everyone calms down and understands the situation and thinks about it, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, this was kind of bound to happen. You know, for people that are less fortunate, you can't like roll through the hood in a Rolls Royce. Like, you just kind of can't, you know?
The last time that we talked, you know, we were talking about problematic lyrics and things of that nature. So
I guess at this point in my life, I don't particularly look to rappers to do these kinds of messaging. I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess I don't really look to musicians, period, anymore. To get these kinds of messages out, which I guess that is kind of sad.
Isn't it kind of a bad thing? And I don't mean that on hip hop. I just mean that just in general that we have such a cynical view towards like artists in general. Yeah. That it's like we expect the default of them is to, you know, kind of not be worth shit as far as things like that go.
Yeah, the more I'm thinking about it, it is kind of bad, but I also understand that most musicians are working for the machine anyway, so it's just kind of how things go. And, you know, and at the same time, I'm also getting to this point where I don't necessarily want to put that burden on musicians anymore. I think that people having access to social media and all this, they should kind of know who to look to. Like, I don't think people should be going to Lil Wayne to get political advice. You know, I don't think that people should be pulling up a Kanye West tweet to say, oh, you know, what do I think about this bill? Or, you know what I mean? Like, at this point, we all have access to the direct thoughts of political analysts. So why are we still waiting for fucking Pusha T to tell us who we should vote for?
I can give you kind of an answer to that. No one should be looking towards Donald Trump for anything either.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Because like, he's the same manner of celebrity. No one should be looking to Paris Hilton to get any advice about anything important. Nobody should be looking.
Yep.
But unfortunately, we're just in that reality to where we are to the tune of 71 million people. You know what I'm saying? I think the biggest explanation for it is celebrity and the celebrity culture that we live in, where, and you add in social media where people can cultivate these like bubbles and these cults of personality, you know, in a positive note for artists, you can use that to sustain yourself and to strive. You know, you cultivate your fan base that'll support you no matter what, and they're gonna ride with you. But then, if you see what happens when you add in a couple of couple million dollars and some political strategists and shit like that, and you can make a megaphone that just hypnotizes people in a way. So I guess in a certain way it's kind of out of people's control to a certain degree.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth about this quite a bit, you know, this whole idea of I want rappers to talk more. And then I start thinking, like, why should they have to? Like, an artist's job is to create art, right? And on one hand, I'm like, well, they shouldn't be held responsible for anything outside of that. But at the same time, if this is also a culture thing, like, you know, if you're at the forefront of a culture and you understand that your culture is the most popular culture in the world, then I feel like, wouldn't you kind of want to make things better?
Wouldn't you, like, do you almost like a, would you feel a sense of responsibility because of
it? Yeah. Like, if you know, I'm trying to think, like, I can't say Kanye because Kanye's going through some shit, but like, I'm trying to think of like a rap, like, I don't know. I hate to always throw this on Kendrick Lamar, but I mean, I guess he's probably the most popular example of this. But if you're a Kendrick Lamar and you know that your words have heavy, heavy, heavy meaning, and they, you know, wouldn't you want to, like, at least understand the weight of your words and use them in a way that could make things better? Or would you rather just keep rapping about the same shit that everybody's been rapping about for the last 3 decades? Part of me wants to say, well, shit, why aren't you using your voice right now to amplify the other voices that are saying, like, what's going on or whatever, you know what I mean? As opposed to just being a part of the status quo. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
So I saw on Twitter when like 50 and them were, when everybody was getting all maggot out towards the end of the election there, that was kind of pissing you off a bit. I mean, as as it was all of us, I guess. But I mean, I, the one of the people who I knew I wanted to just like sit down and talk and just like pick their mind about what they were thinking during that was you.
So, okay. So with Ice Cube, he actually pissed me off the least out of the whole group of rappers that all of a sudden started talking. Mm-hmm. Mainly because I don't think Ice Cube meant any ill will with what happened. I think that Ice Cube got played.
And the part that
sucks is Ice Cube either doesn't understand that he got played or he doesn't want to admit that he got played. But he got fucking played. And my whole thing is, I don't blame Ice Cube for trying to use his platform to make things better. I blame Ice Cube for being ignorant enough to think that this was going to work. Like, I didn't see this contract with Black America. I never signed on for this shit. And if I had a choice of the people that I would want to represent me in something like this, no offense to Ice Cube, but it wouldn't be Ice Cube. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't blame him for taking his contract to Biden and Trump. I think what sucks is the narrative got switched up after that to where it was like, oh, the Democrats ignored Ice Cube and Trump listened to Ice Cube. When it was really like, nah, man, the Democrats saw that your shit was basically in line with what they were already attempting to do. And Trump said, ooh, look, a nigger. I can use this nigger to get other niggers to vote for me. And that was all it was. And unfortunately, Ice Cube never saw that.
And that's what I meant by disappointing. I didn't mean it was as disappointing as in he was like a bad person. It was disappointing as in, I grew up thinking that like if something like that happened, that Ice Cube wouldn't be able to get like played by some punk ass politician like Trump. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That, you know, so it was just kind of like a finding out there's no Santa Claus type of shit. Like, oh man, that could have happened to me. He's just a regular.
Yeah. But look at it from Ice Cube's standpoint, right? Ice Cube just got into politics. He said this.
Yeah, true.
He said this. He just got into politics. He writes up this contract with Black America, and almost fucking immediately, he has the president calling him, being like, yes, let's talk. And he's like, whoa, shit, this was easy. That's all I had to do. Wait, I want to ask you something really quick. Were you actually surprised by not Ice Cube, but people like 50, Wayne? Were you actually surprised by their stances on this?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
50 was trolling
mm-hmm.
to a degree.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't. And this is part of the thing, right? And it's like, it's not going to work with what we had recorded before, but it's kind of like a thesis that I've had where it's like, yo, I think a lot of these rap niggas are right wingers, yo. You know what I'm saying? Like, for real. I think we need to stop getting in this mode. And I think that the Trumpism stuff is kind of like bringing, making this more of a point. But we need to stop getting in this idea that like being Black is a progressive
mm-hmm.
position.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not.
I'm with you. Yep.
Like that's not how that works. Like that, you know, so with that being is like, we need to understand that the reason why a lot of Black people vote Democrat, or I should even say why a lot of Black people vote against Republicans, is because Republicans have openly embraced like weird Nazi shit and fucking Klan shit. You know what I'm saying? Instead of them, if Republicans were just smart enough to be like, yo, let's all just be racist, but let's not say that we're racist. Like, let's be like, we love money. Fuck poor people. We love money.
Let's
fuck
not
poor
say
people.
The racist
I love
shit.
Jesus and my guns and blah, blah, blah. Yo, you'd have a lot of Black people in America that would be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
They're like, oh, yeah, right, that sounds good. Right.
I just rapped about the same shit like
exactly.
Last
week. Yeah, I rap about shooting guns and hating gay people all the time, too. So let me get in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. And I think Trump and his connection to hip hop in the past, like the sort of the figure, the stature that he had as a figure.
Yeah.
I think that's helped come into play. To where I think a lot of guys, I might even heard Ebro talking about this on the show once, but I think a lot of cats are silent because it's like they don't really have that much of a problem with shit. I mean, 50 Cent in his troll summed it up best. I know Trump doesn't like Black people, but damn, 60% in taxes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's like they've been telling us this for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's about time we listen.
I feel that.
So, Mikey, thank you for coming in and talking with us, man. One more time, let the people know where they can find out all the stuff you're doing.
Sure. You can find me on Dead End Hip Hop at youtube.com/Dead End Hip Hop. You can find me personally through my own avenues at mikecetown.com, MikeCetown.com. I do other kinds of reviews, talk about records, talk about other nerdy ass shit, you know. So yeah, you can get all your bases covered.
Y'all make sure you go check that out and support.
Thanks for coming on to come in.
Well, that brings us to a close today. And I guess I'm going to be the one closing this off, aren't I, Mariah? We got a little carried away with that interview. This is the second episode in a row with no music review. We got to do a long one for y'all next time. Yo, Joel, let me get a beat. One more time, make sure you follow Dead End Hip Hop. Check out Mike Seatown and their reviews. Follow Lingua Franca and Dope Knife on Instagram. Follow Dope Knife and Lingua Franca on Spotify. Subscribe to this podcast. Thank you guys for supporting. 1 year old, can you believe it? Yo, yo.
Y'all swimming in the kids' pool. I'm trying to let the world know. I even got the drip too. I'm pimping in the fur coat. I hit you with the big stool. That's why I'm sipping Merlot. Now get up off my dick, fool. You probably call your girl bro. I'm knife. I ain't wonder. I rhyme when I'm in slumber. My mama will whoop my ass. So my music, I hide it from her. I bury these rappers not in the casket, but lying under the gap. Spraying out more lows than a Brian Pumper. I'm the precipice. Ain't nobody fresh as this. And it's like my Bible. Yo, this rash my will and testament. Mainstream niggas want to tell me I'm irrelevant. Dog, I will reach into your ass, pull out your skeleton. You'll never win. That was uncalled for. That was uncalled for and problematic. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going to try to do better.
Hey, I'm Lingua Franca.
I'm Dope Knife.
We are waiting on reparations. We'll see you next week.
See you guys next week. Happy Thanksgiving, y'all.
Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.